I wouldn't say small town. That's quite average, I guess.
Is it Erie? In Erie?
I really want a new host.
I thought I was funny. Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of the Prime Time True Crime Podcast. I'm Robin.
I'm Brody.
And what have you got today for us, Brody?
I have a flashback to the pilot episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so to celebrate our 1K listeners, we're going to go back to the episode that started it all, our original idea for this podcast, which is slightly morphed over time, but we never really covered this case.
Hopefully this one's a lot better quality. Don't go looking for our first episode, thanks.
I don't think you can find it.
Good.
Anyway, so we're going to cover the Pizza Bomber case, also known as the Evil Genius case on Netflix, or the Brian Weld case.
Yep. Awesome. Sounds good. Let's get into it.
So, the main character in this kind of case, I guess you'd call him, is a man named Brian Wells.
Yep.
So, he was a local man of Earing in Pennsylvania. So, they have a population of about 100,000 people at the time. They still do have around that number. So, I wouldn't say small town. That's quite average, I guess.
Is it Erie? In Erie?
I really want a new host.
I thought I was funny.
That was horrible.
Okay.
So anyway, he was a local pizza man of Mamma Mia's Pizza.
Do you know how long he'd been working there for?
Yeah, for about 10 years. He was just a kind of delivery guy. I assume being a smaller business, he might have also took phone orders and that sort of thing.
Got to know the locals, pretty comfortable with what he was doing.
Yeah. So on the 23rd of August, 2003, the pizzeria receives a call. The owner answers the phone.
Mm-hmm.
He can't understand the people on the other end of the phone, so he passes the phone to Brian.
People or person?
I'm just going to say people because I'm not sure of numbers.
Yep.
So he passes the phone to Brian. I assume ordering would just be one person.
Yeah, that's what I...
If you can't understand, then... Mm. So Brian writes down that they want two pizzas. I think they were pepperoni and sausage or something like that. It's not too important.
Right.
And they were to be delivered to a house on Peach Street, which wasn't that far out from the pizzeria itself.
Yep. All right.
So at about 1:30 p.m., keep in mind this is close to the end of Brian's shift. He decided to do this. Obviously, pretty good employee.
Must have had a morning shift.
No, I would have went home to get on the beers. So he goes off to deliver a pizza. And then shortly after this, you find out that Brian's in a bank in a shirt that has spray-painted guests on it with a question mark, trying to rob the local bank.
Not the guest clothing brand.
No, it was like a custom shirt that just had like a white shirt had like the word guest written on it with a question mark.
Like a child had written it on there almost?
I wouldn't say child, no, okay. Just legible handwriting, but yeah. Basically, he had that. He had a cane gun, so a gun that had been fashioned to look like a cane.
Right. Was Brian known to use a cane?
I don't think so. Also, I've seen pictures of the gun. It's not that obvious. It quite clearly looks like a weapon.
Right.
And he had something under his neck, like you could see from his t-shirt. So Brian walks up to the teller, hands her a note. On the note it says, "Gather employees with access codes to the vault and work fast to fill a bag with $250,000. You have 15 minutes.
Oh, that's not a lot of time. Right.
Unfortunately for Brian, you can't just get $250,000 from a teller.
That's a significant amount of money.
So he did ask for people with access codes, but unfortunately the person who had the access code was on break. So the teller basically just emptied her till as per protocol, and Brian got about $8,702.
I wonder if they got those. You know how some banks now, they give them the money with like the ink?
Yeah.
I wonder.
I don't know. I don't think that ever comes up.
Hmm.
So during this time, a witness had contacted 911 and Brian walked out with the cash, sucking on a lollipop that he'd taken. Quite casual in the whole ordeal. So Brian was promptly arrested.
Fair enough.
Kind of handcuffed, thrown on the ground, told to sit there, you've just robbed the bank. And he kept telling police officers that he had a bomb around his neck and that he was going to go off. And he kept telling police officers, "I'm serious, this is a real bomb, please help me." And the police officers, not quite sure what to do, being a local, smaller town.
Don't have much experience with color bombs.
Yeah, so basically the bomb squad was on the way. Brian, after being asked, what had happened, he told police that he was attacked by three unarmed black men when he delivered the pizza, and they told him they'd kill him unless he robbed the bank and did other tasks for them.
Right.
Yeah. So the bomb itself was like a kind of DIY job. So it consisted of two parts. It had a triple banded metal collar with four keyholes around it and a three-digit combination lock.
Does that mean you need, four keys to unlock it? And then not only that, but you need to know the digit.
I'm assuming some of the keyholes may have been fake ones.
Right.
So if you try to just jam any key in there, it malfunction. I'm not quite sure though. It's not quite. I mean, the police say this bomb is a puzzle, so unlocking it is quite a challenge.
Yep.
But it had that. It had an iron box containing 2 6-inch pipe bombs that were loaded with a double base smokeless powder. And the hinge collar locked around his neck like a kind of like a giant handcuff, if you could picture that.
Mm-hmm.
And the investigators could kind of tell it had been built by like professional tools.
So they're thinking, okay, this is professional like bomb heist that they're trying. Yeah. Yeah.
But the bomb also contained 2 Sunbeam kitchen timers and 1 electronic countdown timer.
What a brand to choose. Sunbeam.
I'm assuming that's like the most accessible local brand.
Yeah.
So obviously it's pretty popular, it's been done professionally. But it's also home.
I think our toaster is Sunbeam. That's how.
Yeah, they're just like normal appliances. But basically, it looked like it'd been done professional, but it also had tellings of a home job.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, a professional, but not experienced, probably. In...
Well, no, it'd be like a professional who doesn't have access to a professional studio or the
proper... Yeah, yes, yeah.
Yeah. So, the police didn't attempt, as we said before, to disarm the bomb. The bomb squad was called 10 minutes after Brian was arrested.
I don't think they can... attempt they can
I'm just saying because Brian was kind of asking them
they're not trained. I'm pretty sure District Common police, then street police I should say, so I imagine they wouldn't probably have the technical abilities or skills, and they would have had to wait for the bomb squad inevitably, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. But 3 minutes before the bomb squad would have arrived, the bomb detonated, killing Brian in basically minutes. It basically exploded his head.
It didn't he wasn't quite dead on impact. It took him a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I assume it blew up something important, then he kind of, you know, died out, sadly. So, after he died, officers found his car a list of instructions he was supposed to follow.
Yep.
Police later attempted to complete all these tasks, only to conclude that there was no way to realistically complete them. I think they did them in about 90 minutes, the tasks that they could.
Was one of the tasks to drop the money, like, almost in... Like, was the next task
that's
to
the
drop...
thing. It just seemed like an endless scavenger hunt in which, like, the only... Because you can remember, like, he's meant to have $250,000, right? Mm. So if you robbed a bank and tried to complete a scavenger
hunt... He's also not meant to have the police, like, on his tail.
Yeah. So they reckon that, like, there was a wild goose chase that could never really...
Because what I was getting at with that was if... The first or second, like, step was go here, drop location. Then that makes sense. But if it was, like, the last instruction to go to the drop location, Brian was going to die before the captors got the money.
The thing is, police don't know because they tried to follow the scavenger hunt. They got they got 90 minutes into doing something, and then the clues just either had a dead end or were taken away or didn't exist.
What happened to the money? The money. Did it blow with Brian?
Well, no, the police would have confiscated and given back to the bank because that's their private property.
Yeah,
police famously like to protect private property.
Yeah, okay.
So basically, this case kind of seems straightforward, right? A man was jumped by 3 black men and forced
to... Sounds like the plot of a movie.
It is a plot of a movie.
30 seconds or less.
Yeah, except they're not black guys, they're just white guys.
Mm.
So let's enter some characters here that kind of muddy the waters of this case.
Yeah, tell me there's more characters. Is it the men that attacked him?
No. There's some kooky characters.
Oh.
There's some wacky characters.
Cool.
And there's some zany characters. All our favourites. So we have a man named Bill Rothstein.
Ah.
Bill lived close to where Brian was meant to deliver the pizzas on Peach Street.
Wasn't where he was meant to deliver the pizza, from memory, it wasn't an actual house.
No, it was kind of like
an abandoned lot.
It was
sort of like an abandoned lot that he ended up at.
Yep, so Bill's house was further down from there. Ironically, if police were to investigate Bill's house... near the operation, they would have found a dead body in his freezer.
Oh.
Bill...
That's a good place to leave it.
Yeah. So Bill had a dead body in his freezer which belonged to his partner, on-again, off-again girlfriend from the 60s and 70s, Marjorie Deal Armstrong.
Yep.
Bill explained that the body in the freezer was her ex-boyfriend, and basically, he was, you know, was going to, like, leave the body. He left a note to police saying, rang up saying, hey, I've got a dead body in my freezer. Police arrived and he said, look, this has nothing to do with the pizza bombing thing before. Police are like...
What? What's the relationship?
But basically, Bill had put this body in the freezer per Marjorie's request. Bill did it, he said, because he was frightened of what Marjorie would do if he didn't follow through.
Could she not put it in her own freezer?
I think that... I mean, why would you?
Yes.
So basically, Rothstein kind of dobbed her in. He basically dobbed her in for the murdering of her partner. She pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 7 to 20 years in jail.
Right.
During her sentence, Marjorie decided to be a little bit of a rat. And she dobbed in
She got back at Bill Rothstein then.
Yeah, she basically said that Bill was the mastermind of the whole plot, and that Brian was actually in it himself, and he was, you know, planning to get a cut by using the ruse of having a bomb around his collar. He'd been jumped, and if everything went wrong, he'd just say, "Oh, I wasn't involved. I had a bomb around my collar. I was forced to do this."
Okay, but how do we know this just wasn't Marjorie being like, "Going to get back at you now"?
So there's several
by throwing herself into the case.
Yeah, there's several things that kind of, well, she didn't put herself in the case. She put
Bill. Well, no, but she implicated that they had knowledge.
Yeah,
But
how she what kind of ties Bill to it is as we said before, the bomb and the cane gun were quite both well designed. Bill actually had a background in that kind of design thing of
like engineering and
yeah, like that sort of field. So if anyone in the local town would have the knowledge to build that sort of thing, was a primary suspect.
Not many engineers about in Erie.
I don't think that's well reported on, but Bill was definitely one of them if there was.
Okay, most likely to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, by the time that Marjorie had made these allegations, Bill had passed away from cancer.
Yep.
So he could never kind of defend himself from these claims.
That's probably why she waited.
Yeah. Interesting to note, too, a bit of evidence from this case was that there was handwritten notes that they found inside Wells' car. These were addressed to the quote-unquote bomb hostage. They instructed him to basically rob the bank, follow some instructions to find various keys and combinations hidden throughout Erie, so unlocking the car. It contains drawings, threats, and detailed maps. It basically said if you do what we ask, you wind up with the keys and the combination, you'll be free to go, basically.
Okay, well, I'm just wondering, with the handwritten notes and stuff,
yeah,
I'm just wondering if the police looked into that avenue of handwriting experts to see if it matched any of the people who got involved so far.
So the notes was written what they call a stymie handwriting, S-T-Y-M-I-E for people playing at home. It basically means a handwriting that's kind of like obscured and like hard to decipher on purpose sort of thing. So it's probably not easy to tell from the handwriting who wrote the notes.
Oh, okay, yep.
But basically they said like there's only one way to survive, cooperate completely. And then they said like this is a powerful booby trap bomb. It can be removed only by following our instructions, and in big capitals, act now, think later, or you will die.
Right.
So basically, they constructed this nightmarish, like, scavenger hunt for him against time with $250,000. Basically, the police felt like there was no way Brian would ever succeed at this.
I like how it says, act now, think later. So maybe that's why he grabbed the lollipop. He was just acting and then thinking about it later.
I don't think we should make a joke about this case, but okay. Nah. So basically, the official report says that he arrived on location to deliver the pizza, which had been organized in advance by those involved in the plot. They didn't know whether Brian knew the bomb was real or not, but either point, they ever think that he either willingly put it on or was forced at gunpoint to put it on. So Margie was also sent to prison for life for this, as well as another co-conspirator named Kenneth Barnes.
All right, how does Kenneth fit in?
Basically, he was also just involved in the plotting and organizing of the thing itself.
What was the relationship between him and the others?
So there's reports saying for him and Brian that Brian was also well known in the community to have relations with a sex worker.
Right.
And, you know, Brian would also drive her around to get drugs from Kenneth's house from there. And
Okay, yep.
I think Kenneth and... Well, sorry?
Sorry, I was going to say, probably being a local town, everyone probably knew everyone kind of thing.
Yeah, so, yeah. I think Kenneth and Marjorie may have had a relationship.
Okay.
And that's probably how he knew Bill as well.
But good on him. He didn't end up in the freezer.
yeah. No comment. So basically, yeah, so Dill Armstrong was a really well-known, notorious figure in the community. She had a string of dead lovers that followed kind of her around, like the...
Oh, okay. Lucky Rothstein.
I meant like a string of dead lovers as in like she had a track record.
She just had
it.
Them tied up on...
Yeah. She was charged with murdering her boyfriend, Robert Thomas.
The one in the freezer?
No.
Okay.
This is a different one. Yep. She claims she shot him 6 times in self-defense, and the jury eventually acquitted her.
Self-defense 6 times?
Yep. 4 years later, her husband, Richard Armstrong, died of a cerebral hemorrhage. The death was ruled accidental, but questions lingered. She had a head injury when he arrived at hospital, but the case was never forwarded to a coroner's office.
Right.
So basically, what we have is a story of...
a history of dead husbands.
Yeah, so the big argument in this case is the involvement of Brian Wells, whether he was involved or wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, accounts differ. I think, me and you have a different opinion on this. I think I believe that he was... involved, and you think that he kind of wasn't, was like just a...
I mean, I struggle with that because I feel like he was an unwilling
participant.
Like he knew, so what I'm getting at is he went there and was part of the plot, but wasn't aware that the bomb was going to be very real.
Yeah.
But then what I really struggle with is his mannerisms and actions in the bank and things like that, how he was so timid and, you know, not...
Yeah, but that could have just been, like, you know, anxiety or trauma kind of, like, forcing him to just do actions because his life was on the line, like a fight or flight sort of response.
I'm wondering, genuinely, did he think, like, act now and think later?
Well, no, I mean,
If he took that...
I don't think so. But, like, what would you do in that situation where you've been, like, jumped and put a bomb on around your neck? Would you act, like, scared, or would you just kind of, like, try to suppress your emotion so you could get through the task?
I mean, I feel like my first instance would be law enforcement, but at the same time, I've got a collar bomb around my neck.
They clearly said that they were monitoring him, and if there's any funny business, they'd blow
him
up. They'd
just blow him, so...
Yeah, blow him up, not blow him.
Sorry.
That'd be a weird punishment.
I didn't mean it.
But yeah, I think ultimately we can rule out the three black men.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, I'm not...
I don't know how he fought that. Prejudice and panic.
I think Bill Rothstein's, like, comment after the... regarding the body in the freezer and mentioning Brian Wills just automatically implicates something.
Yeah, I think maybe the way you can look at it is Bill was saying, like, look, this is Marjorie's dead husband. If you guys think she's a suspect, I didn't plan the bank robbery because she was holding this over me, or I didn't get her involved because she was holding this over me.
Mm.
But the fact that, like, the collar was, like, really well made, and Bill had those skills as well as connections to Marjorie, who, you know, later confessed to doing it for no reason, like, unless she was doing, like, a prison, like,
didn't she say that she wanted to, she told Kenneth that she needed the money for, like, she wanted Kenneth to kill her father,
yeah,
but she didn't have enough money to kill Kenneth, and the $250,000 happened to be the amount of money Kenneth was requesting.
Yeah, so I was going to get to that, but as we were alluding to earlier, that's how Kenneth was involved. He had a financial interest in the case of getting Marjorie, making sure she had the money so he could be paid to kill her father to get money. So
I think, I'm pretty sure from what I was reading the other day, he outlived her. His father outlived Marjorie.
Yeah, probably, ironically. That sounds right.
He lived until his 90s, I think.
So there's a couple modes, which is what I want to go into now. The first one, like you mentioned, was monetary. So everyone involved would get a handsome payout for this.
But then doesn't that take away, if the goal was Marjorie's to get the money to kill, to get Kenneth Barnes to kill her dad, then why is she separating that amount if that was the amount that...
What do you mean?
So if it was an agreement where they were like, yeah, we'll split it like this many ways for involvement, then why would Marjorie want to do that? Because she wanted the whole amount to pay Kenneth to kill her father.
Well, she probably had something hanging over Bill to get him involved.
Yeah.
And this is what I was going to bring up. The reason I think that... your boy wasn't, what's his name? Pizza boy.
Brian,
I'm blanking. The reason I think he wasn't involved is because if he was in it just for money, why would he settle with 8,000 or 7,000, 8,000, whatever it was from the till?
Exactly. I feel like that complicates things too, because I feel like in my head, it could go one or two ways. He's either going to be like, it's kind of the best I can do. Can't do much else with the situation. But at the same time, if we take Marjorie as this very powerful, coercive sort of character, then he also has in his mind, well, she's not going to be happy with that. What do I do?
I think this is a quiet evidence that maybe how I see it playing out is Marjorie orchestrated to pay Kenneth. Kenneth helped to organise it to help him get money. She somehow guilted Bill into doing this. I feel like he was quite gullible towards her. He was hiding a dead body in his freezer for her,
probably for still had strong feelings.
And that they just picked off Brian.
Mm.
Either lying to him, saying he'd get money, or kidnapping him. Either way, I don't think Brian was as well-informed as the others. I think either there's two options. One, he was told he'd get the sum of money, and then as he had a bolo strapped to him, they take the money from him and just blow it up, get rid of him.
Now, suspiciously, didn't the actual owner of the pizza place that answered the phone originally over Brian, he suspiciously died a few weeks later after Brian for a suspected drug overdose?
Yeah, so maybe there was an involvement of him getting Brian, because if we keep in mind, he said that he couldn't understand a person on the phone, passed it to Brian, who understood.
He clearly understood what was being said.
So, like, obviously that's another player, the pizza owner. I don't... how much weight I give to it, I'm not sure. Maybe it's just a coincidence.
I mean, wouldn't you just say, oh, would I be able to talk to Brian?
Yeah, but then that raises suspicion when the pizza guy's like, oh, I was just told to put the phone to you. Mm. I think overall, Marjorie is definitely a player. Bill probably designed
it. Bill was probably there for the brains, not for...
Yeah. The other motive I saw was that this was all just to get them famous. I don't buy this one as much, but basically the police or theorists online have concluded that the plot was never going to work.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the thing I was just about to come back to is that surely Marjorie, if, unless we're assuming they were all in on it, Marjorie Rothstein and Kenneth Barnes, surely they knew that the police were going to be contacted almost immediately after Brian's departure or during the incident. Yeah.
The other thing
That's where I'm confused. They knew he was going to get caught up with, most likely.
Yeah. The other thing that kind of points towards this being a publicity stunt is that everything was just over the top. Like, this scavenger chase that could never be solved, the color bomb being so, like, unneedly, like, complicated, the cane gun. Like, everything just feels like a bad Hollywood movie. So people have kind of wondered if it was just, like, done like that to kind of, you know, like, get them famous or get them big. Like, we're talking about it, for instance.
But what does that mean for Brian? Do you think that he was... Do you think he was part of wanting to get famous?
I think you can look at it one or two ways again. I'm only a participant or participant in getting famous. Or they just said to him, money. Like,
or they convinced him it wasn't real.
Yeah. The thing with this case is that, like, because Brian and Bill are both dead, and Marjorie is not a very credible...
Marjorie's now dead too.
She's also not a credible source here. She's been shown to lie. She's been shown...
She waited till after Bill was dead before...
Yeah, she was, you know, done for pleaded, like, insanity or something like that. Like, she's obviously not mentally well, and we're relying on her as a source of information. I think at the end of the day, this is a case where we'll never quite know the answers, but there's two distinct possibilities of what happened. Either coercion of Brian or compliance of Brian, and either money or the less likely one, they did as a publicity stunt.
Yeah, I definitely am not sticking with the publicity stunt. I think money for crimes like that is always
a
huge...
Yeah, definitely. But that's a short episode today. I thought we'd just cover this case, go back forever.
It's a very interesting case. It always has been. It's there's so many ways you can...
Evil Genius is a really good documentary. If you guys get the time on Netflix, just have a go at it. Like, Netflix have been producing killer crime documentaries. you know, Staircase, this, they're all really...
Making a Murderer.
Yeah, Tiger King. They're all really, really good. Hopefully we can cover more of Netflix's documentaries, because it's nice to see people getting into documentaries these days.
And true crime.
Yeah, exactly. Well, less so true crime. It's a bit spooky. But anyway, I've been Brody.
I've been Robin. Thanks for tuning in.
See you next time.